And a couple of days ago, Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin met in Helsinki, where the two discussed the troubled post-Cold War relationship between the U.S. and Russia. The most notable part, though, was the joint press conference where Trump lavished praise upon Putin and stated emphatically that Russia did not meddle in the U.S. general election in 2016 that saw his election. The meeting is a conclusion to an overseas trip across Europe, Asia, and North America, during which Trump spent most of his time attacking longtime allies like Canada, the UK, and the EU. For many of his supporters, Trump's public admiration of Putin has been the final straw. Now, to discuss this Trump-Putin meeting and what it means for international politics at large, I'm joined by Professor Joseph Camilleri, founding director of the Center for Dialogue at La Trobe University. Thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure.
So, were you at all surprised by Trump's praise of Putin and the dismissal of U.S. intelligence agencies?
No, it is consistent with what he has said in the past. Now, he has since somewhat tried to amend what he said by suggesting that he meant to say would not instead of would. But I think we need to place this in context. And I must tell you, much of the commentary we're hearing is terribly ill-informed.
Mm-hmm.
If I can just put the whole thing in context, if I may, for
Absolutely.
Your listeners. The point is, President... The president is not a particularly, agreeable individual, mm-hmm. often given to off-the-cuff, ill-informed comments, rhetoric that many people would find quite objectionable, almost to the point of vulgarity. We know all that.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that there is in the United States a very powerful security establishment. And for a variety of reasons, which we can discuss, they have come to the view that Russia under Putin, the Putin administration, has to be fought tooth and nail. And they're not going to allow an American president to change that course of events, that course of action, I should say. So that's what's been happening, and therefore they've tried to put the president on a leash.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing about the question of Russian meddling in the U.S. election, which probably did happen to some extent, is part of the leash they're using to make sure that he doesn't get too far out of line on the broad direction of what they think U.S. policy should be. And may I add that because this pressure is so strong, it has influenced a number of his own appointments, senior appointments to his administration. So his own administration has some of them as in its most senior positions, people who take a similar view about Russia's role in the world under Putin. So that, I think, is the background.
Yeah.
Now, he, for whatever reason, wants to see an improvement in relations between the U.S. and Russia, and he has to deal with this. He's not particularly well-equipped to do that, even if everything was plain sailing. But nevertheless, that's what he has intimated, both before his election and since, he would ideally like to do, but not just Democrats, but the key intelligence agencies,
Joseph, the
Department of Defense, and so on, have a very different view of which way the United States
should go. So, Joseph,
can I
say that the former CIA director, John O'Brien, called Trump's actions treasonous in this case? And as you said, you know, he's kind of, what he said has gone against the will of the intelligence agencies. Does his praise of Putin and sort of his general behavior constitute treason?
I said that again.
Does his behavior and sort of how he's acted towards Putin, what he said, actually constitute treason?
I wouldn't have thought so, really. Let's face it. A lot of noise is being made about Russian meddling in the U.S. election,
mm-hmm.
which I think probably did happen to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
How much, under whose precise direction or instruction? Did it have much of an impact on what actually transpired in terms of how Americans voted? We really don't know. I suspect not a great deal. But nevertheless, the available evidence suggests there must have been some meddling.
Mm-hmm.
But the United States and other countries haven't stopped meddling in other people's internal political processes for decades. This is par for the course.
Mm-hmm.
The United States has, in fact, removed a number of regimes by force. The United States spied on Chancellor Merkel in Germany. Meddling at the highest order, and by and large, a much more widespread and effective than any Russian attempt at meddling.
So
I think this has been blown up because it suits, this is what I've been trying to explain, which is contrary to the conventional wisdom, blowing it up in order to neutralize any attempt by George Bush, by the current president.
Yes.
To move in a somewhat different direction.
So from Trump's perspective, if he is sincerely trying to improve U.S.-Russia relations, does his actions sort of go towards that, or is there a coherent strategy behind his
brushing
off of longtime allies and saying, oh, Putin, you're doing a great job?
Yes. No, I don't think there is a coherent strategy. And that's one of the reasons why it's not going to get very... One of the reasons it's not going to get very far is because of the powerful forces within the United States that are trying to stop that happening. That's one. The other reason is that he lacks a coherent strategy for doing it. A coherent strategy would set out what are the key issues on which some give and take might be necessary. What is the United States prepared to give Russia? What does it require of Russia? What are the main points of contention? What is the role that allies can or should play in such an attempt to improve tensions around the world? What are the areas in which the United States and Russia could collaborate in order to deal with a number of very serious conflicts around the world?
Right.
How might that happen? There is no strategy, I regret to say, which provides an answer to those questions.
Now, Joseph, what do you see as a sort of long-term effects of Trump's continued praise of authoritarian leaders like Putin?
Well, I think he likes strong leaders.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about that. And the reason for that is that he sees himself as a strong leader, and therefore he's drawn to that. That is his personality. That, I think, is what he said prior to his election, and that's what he's been saying since his election. Having said that, you have a very, very strong leader in China.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't stop him embarking on a trade war with China.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very contradictory approach to a very, very troubled and complex world.
And finally, I'd like to ask, what do you think is sort of the aftermath of this for the U.S.? Can it recover its sort of image as you know, like a leader of free world and democracy? Or is it kind of, you know, does it still maintain respect of international communities, or has Trump kind of destroyed that goodwill?
Well, again, we need context. I think America's position as leader of the free world was in sharp decline before Trump arrived on the scene. Now, he's probably exacerbated that, and I would imagine that Europeans in particular, but others too, and who knows, one day Australia, may come to the conclusion, I think they're already coming to the conclusion, that whatever happens in the United States, whoever becomes president, however Congress moves, they will need, as time goes on, to be much more in charge of their own destinies than purely relying on the United States. I think that is the view that's been emerging even before Trump arrived on the scene, and it has certainly strengthened since his arrival.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Joseph, to talk about it.
My pleasure.
Absolutely.